I'm Walter Woods. The following episode of Ear Hustle contains language and violent scenes that may not be appropriate for all listeners. Discretion is advised.
Walter Woods? Okay, Earlonne.
I haven't used that name since elementary. It was like too old for me.
Anyway, this is a first. You have never done a listener alert before.
Nope, because usually these alerts are made for me. But since I'm not in this episode, they made for you, Nigel.
I guess we both swear too much. In any case, we want to welcome listeners back. This is the first episode of Season 5 of Ear Hustle.
Season 5. Mm-hmm. This is my second season as your outside co-host. Like last season, I'm going to continue to do stories about life post-incarceration. Mm-hmm. So, I'm going to send you back in there with you-know-who.
Oh, you mean Rahsaan New York Thomas?
Yeah, the light-skinned dude.
And on this episode, we're going inside, so I got to leave you here, Earlonne.
Hey, I'm cool with that. I'm not arguing, Nige. I'm not trying to go back in there right now. But I'll be back before you know it, Skillet.
Wait, who are you calling Skillet?
I call everybody Skillet.
Dumb Dave, Big Mike, Kamikaze, Tucker the Fucker,
Low Key, 12 Gauge,
G-Rock,
Bonnaroo,
Kill Will,
T-Bone, Alley Cat,
Squeak Box.
What do you think of your moniker, New York?
I love my moniker.
Oh, yeah?
I love that I'm from New York because there's like a cool ring to it.
Mm-hmm. So there's pride there?
There's definitely pride there. But if I was like from like Arizona, I'm not saying there wouldn't be pride there. I'm just saying I don't want to be known as Arizona.
Wait, why are you even known as New York anyway?
In California, they tend to name you by or give you this nickname by where you're from.
Well, I have to say, it's not the most creative way to come up with a nickname?
Well, you know, naming you by where you're from is not that creative, but there are a lot of other kind of names in here.
Well, you got Rat, Country,
Dog Patch, Big Dog, Little Dog,
Mad Dog,
Dirty Dog, Dirty Red, Scaleless Black,
Pookie,
Beat 'Em Up,
Hot Sauce, Third Rail,
Whitey, Trouble, Trigger, Negro, Belon, Dopey Joker, Clown,
Rambo.
Usually when I meet guys, they introduce themselves by their monikers, and I don't even know their birth names for quite a long time. So there was like Hitman, Razor, Mittens, Slash, Big Az. And I have to say, I didn't actually meet this person. I only heard about Booty Lock.
I don't know what a Booty Lock is. I'm not going there. But I know my boy Wall Street, mm-hmm. Elias, K Bourne, Scarface, and Black and Knees, and Juvenile Hall.
Oh my God,
and Taco.
The list goes on and on.
Some of these names are crazy, some of them are funny.
And some of them, you have to admit, are boastful.
And they're all part of prison lore.
Yep, they all have interesting backstories. And that's what we're talking about today. Prison lore, myths, and monikers.
The names we call ourselves and the crazy stories we tell ourselves about life in prison. I am Rahsaan New York Thomas.
I'm Nigel, no moniker poor. And this is San Quentin's Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Hey, Nige.
Yes, Earlonne?
You didn't hear this from me, but Normal Gossip is back for a sixth season.
Oh, nice.
Join host Kelsey McKinney as she shares the juiciest gossip from the real world. Each episode, she's joined by a special guest, and you might recognize a couple this season from our Radiotopia family.
Normal Gossip, named one of the best podcasts of the year by Time Magazine and Vulture. It's out now on all your favorite podcast platforms. New episodes starting April 17th. Hey, Earlonne, you know I'm going to tune in because you know I love gossip.
I know.
Support for Ear Hustle comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software, or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable, all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/earhustle. That's odoo.com/earhustle. Odoo, modern management made simple.
So it's my first time in prison, California. I walk into my cell in reception, and my cellmate's about 6'3", 240 pounds. He's got a pair of SS bolts on his cheek. He's got a swastika on his throat in the front, the middle.
Painful. Painful.
On the back of his head, he had a Hitler and Mussolini and Eva Peron. And he immediately asked for my paperwork. It was no small talk. It was, what's up? You got your paperwork?
Very first thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, sure.
The paperwork said his name, Jason Griffin, and his crime. But New York, will you explain why Jason had to present his papers to his cellie?
Yeah, so in prison, if you're not there for like what's called an acceptable crime, mm-hmm. if you're there for child molestation or rape, it's an issue. Yeah. You have to show your paperwork mm-hmm. to prove that you're in for a crime that is acceptable.
So literally guys have paperwork that says what their crime is?
Literally,
okay.
Yes.
Okay.
I've got 10 felonies, including a high-speed chase, some commercial burglaries, and some false personation, some stolen cars. And then I have a prior that he also saw for bank robbery. So he was like, okay, solid. You can stay.
Jason passed. He passed the test.
He passed that test.
So he's like, what's up, man? You know, I'm kill switch. And I was like, okay, here we go. And I said, well, hey, I'm Jason. And he's like, oh, okay. What should I call you? I was like, Jason? No, we gotta figure out. You don't have a handle? No, not really. I don't have a handle. And he was like, well, we need to get you a handle. You know, we're gonna give you a handle before morning. You're gonna have a handle. And I was like, okay, that's cool.
So why do you have to have a handle, New York?
You got to create an image, Nigel.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be bigger and tougher than you really are.
All right.
Jason might be cool for school.
Definitely.
But it's not going to cut it in the prison.
Especially if your cellie is kill switch.
He starts saying, well, what are you thinking? I don't know. You know, I never really thought about it. He's like, well, what do you like? You know, what's your thing out there? And I said, well, I love music. You know, I absolutely love music. That's like my passion. He's like, oh, yeah, good. He's like, well, you like metal? And I was like, not particularly. I was like, you know, it's all right. You know, and I love all sorts of music, but really that's not my go-to genre. And he's like, well, what kind of music you grew up on? And I said, well, man, I grew up on Motown and funk. And he was like, I'm going to forget you said that. So we just moved along. He's like, well, what else are you into? And I was like, well, I like boats. He's like, well, how about cars? You know, yeah, I mean, I like cars in that, like, they get me from place to place. And, you know, I like to have a nice one, but I'm not, like, super mechanically inclined or anything. He was like, well, we'll just think on it.
So Jason thought on it, and he came up with something car-related.
So I kind of threw out there, manifold. How about manifold? I got an idea. And I'm kind of half joking, you know, and I'm kind of like snickering to myself. And he's like, that's it. That's solid. The next morning, we're at breakfast, you know, and people are introducing themselves. And everybody's got a moniker, you know, it's like Caveman and Psycho. And I'm like, hey, I'm Jason. And I go to like say Jason. He kind of shoots me a look, you know, like shoots me a unit. And so I was like, manifold. And the guy who I was talking to, like mid-bite, looks up. He's like, that's badass.
I kind of think it's badass, too.
It is.
But manifold didn't stay manifold for long. When he got out of reception and went to his first prison, believe it or not, he went back to Jason. So what do you think? Why do you think in prison people want to have monikers?
For the most part, people in prison are hiding behind a mask. And I think that mask needs a moniker.
You know, Naj, I don't totally agree with Jason.
Why not?
It's not always about hiding behind a mask. Sometimes a moniker can actually tell the world who you are.
All right.
And if I had been Jason Selly, I'd have been calling them jukebox.
Oh, I definitely like that.
Since we've been together, ooh, loving you forever is what I need.
The guy can sing Motown, country, blues, hippity hop.
Right, you can just ask him to sing stuff, and he does. And we're going to hear more from Jason Jukebox later.
never be untrue.
So when I hear that you're a kidnapper,
yes,
I think you should be a little bigger. Can you describe yourself?
Well, then I was about 115, 125 pounds max, and I was about, well, I still am, 5'3 and a half maybe.
This is Shorty. It was clear how he got his name.
Well, anybody who is under 5'4, 5'5-ish, we're all Shorty.
And how do you feel about that?
I'm comfortable with that. Yeah, I'm comfortable with that. I might even like it. In some aspects, it kind of helps me because when you hear about the stuff that I've done in prison over the years, you would think that I'm like 6'2", 6'3". Like, oh, no, he didn't do that. And then when they meet me, they're like, that's him? Yeah, so, I mean, you know, yeah.
Shorty's a tough guy. I think he's even intimidating.
Definitely for a guy's size. He says that in prison, there are big dudes and little guys. And he says it's a lot like the movie Jurassic Park.
When them little bitty raptors saw the dude and one of them came up to him and he was like, shoo, get away. That's true, the big dude could do that. Then the next one comes, and the next one comes. Oh, damn, you got a problem. Shit, you better run. If you don't run, I promise you, you could be the biggest, baddest dude on the planet. You could be Mike Tyson and Bruce Lee mixed. But when them little bitty raptors get on you, I promise you, you will not get away. Oh, no. You're going to accept everything they have to give you. And I promise, you will be the one that's hurt.
Come doused in mud, soaked in bleach, as I want you to be.
This is Jason again.
You mean Jukebox?
As a friend, as an own enemy.
Nigel.
Yes?
Do you know how our co-producer, John Yaya Johnson, got his moniker?
Believe it or not, I've never asked him.
Never asked?
I know, it's crazy, because you know how curious I am about stuff.
You're supposed to ask questions.
I know, I actually feel bad. Do you know the story behind it?
Yes. So Yaya is Arabic for John.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's great.
And Yaya recently went out to the yard to record guys telling the stories behind how they got their names.
What's your name? Do you go by a moniker? And if you do go by a moniker, how did you get that moniker?
My name is Alvin Williams. They call me Gator. I got Gator on my last life sentence when I was an aspiring partner. I was working out with a heavyweight, and I was showing him his problems, and he kept hitting me hard with his jabs. You know, being a lightweight back in those days, that was kind of hard. And I got upset at him and because he kept hitting me with his jab, and I bit him. And when I bit him, this was in 1970, I bit him and I wouldn't let go.
So when you bit him, did you spin on him like a gator too and rip off the limb?
I was trying to take his chest off. I had bit him right in his chest, you know, and I was trying to bite it, take the skin off of it because he hurt me, you know what I mean? And I was trying to get back at him because I couldn't whoop him. But I had that grip on him and I wouldn't let him go. And when they got us apart, when they wiped the blood and stuff away, it was the shape of a gator. I'm telling you, it was unbelievable.
Cause I'm a cowboy, on the steel horse I ride, and I'm wanted, wanted, dead or alive.
When you go to prison, you better do your homework. You know, you know who is who and what is what.
All right, New York. This is where moniker meets myth, where the story behind the name is so strange, it's the stuff of legend. It's time to talk about Purple Passion.
Purple Passion, Pink Panther, Mother Dearest, Dead on Row. These are names for a guy that, according to prison lore, you should stay away from. How did they describe this guy?
They say he, big dude with some squabbles. And he's not afraid to hit the yard. And he done defeated a few people that came at him.
That's Alex Ross. And this is Tony Tafoya.
This person will walk up to you, knock you out, take you into your cell, And when you wake up, there will be a candy bar on your chest or your pillow.
So supposedly when he was in Corcoran, the police used to use him for inmates that they didn't like. And when they get into with an inmate, they send him to that cell, and he do his due.
Wait a minute. How do you know about this, first of all?
Just hearing over the years, you're hearing about it.
And so were you in Corcoran?
No, I was never there.
So how you know this is true?
Some credible people told me.
Everything in prison was based off of something that happened at one time. So at one time, yeah, I believe that maybe it did happen. But did it happen a lot? I don't know.
You know, I first heard about Purple Passion when I was locked up in New York.
Like 3,000 miles from here?
3,000 miles from here. It's one of the stories you hear all across the country. A prison legend.
Yeah, but what about what Tony just said, that everything in prison is based on something that actually happened at one time? So do you think it's possible Purple Passion could be based on a real person?
I don't know. All I know is that Purple Passion keeps popping up in one guise or another. We talked to someone who says he actually met the man behind the moniker and the myth.
Except his name in this case was Pink Panther.
Tell me about the Pink Panther.
I heard a lot of stories about this dude. Hey, man, I'm going to cell with him. Why? Man, he be knocking people out and taking their booty. Straight to the point.
This is Raphael Bankston. He goes by Nephew.
He done did this, he done took that from him, and left a touchy roll on their pillow.
Nephew got some bad news when he got to Corcoran. He was going to have to cell up with this guy.
Hey, I kid you not. At that moment, I clenched both my cheeks as tight as I could. Seriously. And I'm like, man, what the hell? Right? Somebody said, hey, look, man. Judge for yourself, man. Judge for yourself, right? I walk in the cell, lift my head up and my chest up like I'm a G4 or something. Like, hey, what's up? Change my voice and everything. He like, what's up? You know, so we both in the cell and everything. He like, what you in for? I'm lying, man. I killed 9 people. Come on, I ain't kill no 9 people, right? He like, well, I did some things too, and I'm stuck. I got a life sentence and this and that. I never forget, I said, hey, man, people told me before I came in here that, you know, you didn't take advantage of, you know, younger men, man, my age, or, you know. He said, what you mean? And his voice got a little more higher now. Say, nah, man, say to the point, though, man, people told me that you rape people in here, man. You know, making eye contact with him. I'm serious. Kid you not, if he'd have touched my chest, he'd have seen how scared I was.
What size was he? What did he look like?
He had some big arms. Both of my arms is one of his arms. And plus an extra arm on top of that. His arms is huge, man, like he do push-ups for breakfast. I'm like, man, if he ever really get into it, he gonna break some jaws, right? He says, man, I got a pass. He's like, you got a pass. He said, I'm not proud of my past. You know, I've done things that, you know, haunt me to this day. He said, but I'm a new person, right? I've said things like that to people to disarm them, you know, manipulation things. So I kind of had to figure out if this person telling the truth or not. I'm still kind of sketchy about going to bed around you. I want you to go to sleep first. But I also want to get a good night's rest, man. And I couldn't do that just because of my fears of this person's past.
But he never tried nothing, right?
You know, he didn't. And I'm just thankful.
So let me ask you this. The past never came up again, but this myth, this legendary aura around, was it true? Was he really like that? Would he really leave Tootsie Rolls in people's chests?
This person told me they did, but this person also told me they are no longer like that. And so all the story that people was talking about, he didn't deny.
So at some point, did you realize that his conversion was true?
I moved out.
6 in the morning, police at my door. Fresh Adidas squeaking across the bathroom floor. Out my back window, I made my escape. Didn't even get a chance to grab my old school tape. Mad with no music, but happy because I'm free. Because the streets to a player is the place to be. Got a knot in my pocket.
We'll be back after the break with more myths and monikers. Close at
hand. I'm a self-made monster of the city streets. Remotely controlled by hard hip-hop beats. But just living in the city is a serious task. Didn't know what the cops wanted, didn't have time to ask.
The next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths.
Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now they are the story. Hear a feed from episodes across NPR podcasts that center Black voices. Stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts.
So, New York, I have a theory about purple passion.
So do I.
Okay, you go first.
It's taken on mythical proportions, but it's based on something true. There aren't that many predators in prison, but they do exist.
That's what I was thinking. It's kind of a cautionary tale. It tells guys coming to prison, watch out, watch your back.
Or you might wake up with a Tootsie Roll on your chest.
Okay, I can see why guys might want to have a tough guy moniker like Killswitch. I mean, who's going to mess with a guy named Killswitch, right?
No, people tell you who you are. And if a guy's telling you that if you switch him on, he's going to kill you, I'm not messing with him.
Stay back.
It's not just Killswitch and purple passion you got to worry about, Nadja.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of things to worry about, and there are cautionary tales for almost every one of them. There's one about kites, for example.
Oh, yeah. The secret notes that are passed from cell to cell.
Here's Steve Brooks on that topic.
Oh, man. So when I first came to prison in 1996, I was 23 years old, first time on the yard. I was at Old Corcoran, one of the most dangerous prisons in the state. And the first thing they told me is, if somebody throw a kite under your door, don't read it. Because if you read it, you in. And I was like, in what? And they was like, well, don't worry about all that. If they throw a kite under your door, don't read it. And so for a long time, I was just kicking kites right back under the door because I was like, man, I'm not reading nothing. If you got something to say, say it through the door or whatever.
If you read the kite, you're in. You're part of the plot. You are now implicated in some kind of trouble that has nothing to do with you. At least that's what they say.
It's like you're locked into a contract you never signed. Is that something you were warned about back in New York? New York?
No. Actually, I never heard of the kite issue in,
oh, really?
In New York. Nah, but once I came to California, people told me the same thing over and over again. Don't read the kites that come your way.
Well, what could have been in there?
Well, I don't know. That was the reason why I didn't read it.
Your curiosity never was like, yeah, I want to know what's in there.
No, I mind my own business. That was the first thing I learned when I hit the level 4, y'all. Just mind your own business. Yeah.
Have you seen anybody in your 25 years like get in trouble for reading the kite? Like it went bad for them? They read a kite they shouldn't have?
No, actually, I have. I've never seen it happen. I've never seen somebody read a kite and be in. So I was like, okay, that had to be a legend or something.
Sitting in the morning sun, I'll be sitting when the evening comes, watching the ships roll in, and then I'll watch them roll away again. Oh, I'm just sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. Oh, I'm just sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time.
There is another legend related to kites, and it has to do with mice.
Yeah, I tried to get to the bottom of this one with Richie Morris.
Mm-hmm.
He's been incarcerated for more than 34 years.
A long time.
So you probably heard a lot of different rumors and myths and legends and different, you know, stories throughout your penitentiary years.
Yeah, I guess I have.
There's one I'm trying to get to the bottom of.
Yeah.
We heard that people in prison have used, or maybe even still use, rodents, actual rats and mice, to deliver messages to other people's cells.
I've heard the story of Freeway Freddy. They put a string on his leg and sitting down the chair with a kite.
Wait, hold on, who's Freeway Freddy?
Freeway Freddy was a mouse. And he's a tier mouse.
So tell me how this worked.
Well, you tie a string to his leg and send him from cell to cell. You can send him all the way down the tier. You know, somebody give him a little something to eat down the tier, and then they send him back with a kite.
And so how did this Freeway Freddy know what cell to go to?
Guys would be watching for him, and they'd pull him in.
Well, what if the wheeler went to the wrong cell?
Nah, I don't think it's gonna, you know. There was respect back then, so, if, you know, people weren't gonna mess with something that wasn't directly coming to them. Mm. The guys knew better than that. You know, and if they did something like that, there were going to be repercussions. So, that was the nature of the politics back then.
So, do you believe in Freeway Freddy? Do you think he really deliver messages?
I've been looking at the ingenuity of incarcerated men for decades, right? And you know as well as I do that when we're in a situation where we're limited in terms of our movement, we find a way to get what we need to where it needs to go. You know, it's just. Just how we are, man.
There's another legend that seems to be everywhere in American jails and prisons. And this one is right out of a 70s kung fu movie. In New York, you talked about it with David Gadley, who's also known as...
D. Yep, Naj. I heard about this one when I was back east on Rikers Island.
I heard this story about these two Asian brothers that whooped a whole bunch of correction officer butt. And then I come to L.A. County Jail, and I heard the same thing.
Uh-huh.
That it was one Asian dude that... So I'm wondering, man, is this a myth? Is this a made up? Is this something Asian people tell people so you can be fearful of them? That we think they all know Kung Fu? Or what's popping with this, man?
No, actually, it was a true story, man, about this Asian guy up in L.A. County Jail.
Man, what you know about it, man?
So what I heard about it, because this was before my time of going to the county jails, but all my uncles and my cousins and all them was going at that time. So what happened was they weren't trying to feed the dude his meal. So one of the COs came in there talking madness to the guy. And the guy whooped on him and threw him out the cell. Then when one of the COs saw that the other CO ran up out the cell, he ran in there. Then when he ran in there and tried to do something, he mingled him. And when they saw him mingling, they tried to rush up in there. And as they was rushing up in there, he's squabbling with them. Boo, 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 boo. And he knocking them out the cell. He put his back up against the wall, and he's just going at it. Boo, 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 boo. They had sent like five at one time on him. They couldn't do nothing to him. They just kept sending sheriffs. Kept sending them. Well, nobody getting their job done because they couldn't get him down because he knew karate real good. And he... beating their asses. I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. That's what he did. He's beating their asses. It got so bad out of hand, they had to airlift his father. I think his father was in Folsom at the time. And they had to airlift his father to LA County Jail. And they sent his father in there to talk to him to calm him down.
So how do you know this is true, man? Why do you believe this story?
Well, because every time I hear the story, it's the same way. It haven't changed. I know you say you heard it. And it was two Asian guys.
That's in the New York version.
Yeah, but inside of L.A. County Jail, it was just one Asian guy.
I heard that dude is in another prison right now, and people know him.
Huh.
And they said he only beat up four sheriffs.
No, it was more than four.
All right, New York, I don't know about this one. It really relies on tired old stereotypes.
I hear you. I can see that. But I talked to someone with a different perspective on this story.
Okay.
Joe Garcia, I've been incarcerated 16 years and rolling.
And what county jail did you come through?
Los Angeles.
Did you hear anything about a guy who supposedly took on a bunch of deputies?
I think you're referring to an Asian gentleman, and yes, I heard a crazy story about some younger Asian prisoner. For some reason, he was in distress. He wanted to see his father or his grandfather, something like that, and he wasn't going to take no for an answer, and he just kept doing some Matrix-type stuff. Somersault, screaming, yelling, sprinting up walls and karate kicking them. He was, you know, submission, twisting their wrists and pushing them away. And it all sounds hinky because rather than shoot him or kill him, which is what they probably would have done if it were a real story, is they ended up getting his dad or his grandfather to talk him down and tell him to calm down.
We should point out here that Joe Garcia's mother is Chinese and his father is Mexican.
I heard it from other races, blacks, whites, And they always spoke of it in that legendary Bruce Lee type of sense. So when certain things happened or people found out, oh, you're half Asian, they sort of put me in that same category. They used to say, wow, you really know your shit then, huh? You know that stuff. I mean, what am I going to do, correct them that I'm not a legend?
So I heard about that guy, and I heard about another guy in San Diego, and I heard about two brothers in New York on Rikers Island. And so, and all these stories, they were Asian guys that whooped the hell out of a whole bunch of officers. Why does that story go around so much?
I guess it circulated because we all dream of not letting the sheriffs get the best of us. And again, this is a legend. And again, I think this legend was mainly perpetuated by non-Asians. And so there's that whole stereotype that we know martial arts, that just like, you know, a black guy must know how to play basketball. If he's like 6'5" or taller, he could probably dunk. So, you know, if you're Asian and you're somewhat athletic, you must be able to kick people in the head and, you know, flying tiger, crouching dragon, whatever it is, you know, all that stuff, you know. So it's the power of stereotypes, the power of imagery. I do kind of like that story. I'm not going to lie. I do kind of like it. I'm proud that it is an Asian stereotype, you know.
Sometimes I feel like I don't have a partner. Sometimes I feel like my only friend is the city I live in, the city of angels. Lonely as I am, together we cry.
All right. Some of these prison myths are based on fear, some on stereotypes, and some are about self-preservation. And some are just plain weird and gross.
Like this one, told to us by Eric Copeland, a.k.a. Slade.
They're doing count, and the count's off. It's off by one guy, you know? So they slam the whole prison. They're looking for this guy. They don't find this guy. The guy's cell, he's like, I don't know where he's at, you know? Maybe he's, I don't know. So finally, I guess they come to this guy's cell, and there are traces of blood in the cell, there's stuff like that, this and that, and he had killed his cellie, cut his cellie up, flushed most of his cellie down the toilet, and they caught him trying to bust his skull open to flush it down the toilet when they caught him. That's a story I was told before I even got here. And then it was like confirmed when I got here that this is supposedly something that happened here. I don't know.
Do you believe it?
Seems a little far-fetched, but I've heard some pretty crazy prison stories, so.
So, there are crazy prison stories. They're really more cautionary tales. And also, as we heard, there are many crazy monikers.
A lot. Mm-hmm. And like we said, each moniker has a story behind it. But what happens if the moniker you had since you were 15 sounds a whole lot different to you 50 years later?
Richard Johnson was in an episode way back in season one about the SHU.
That's the security housing unit,
mm-hmm.
where you get sent when you get into trouble with the COs. When he came in for his interview, as soon as we started recording, he got shady.
Shady?
He put his shades on.
Oh my God, he did.
The eyes are the mirrors to the soul. So I'm kind of protective of my soul, so I wear my glasses where you can't see. But I can see you.
What is your name?
Richard Razor Johnson.
And so how did you get the nickname Razor?
Well, it started as I dressed. People would say Razor Sharp. But when I came to prison, people just dropped the sharp.
Mm-hmm. And just started calling you Razor.
Right.
And so when I think of Razor, I think of Rikers Island, the little single-edge razors, the gem stars that people carry in their mouth. And it have nothing to do with that?
No. It has nothing to do with violence.
Have you ever been to the hole for an incident involving a razor?
Yes. At one time, I tried to live up to that moniker. If there was a fight or a riot or whatever, I want to be on the front line. I want to be the first one to throw the first blow. And that builds your rep.
And how often did any of those incidents involve a razor?
Anytime I can get my hands on one.
When was the last time that you got in trouble or you got into a disciplinary issue over anything?
My last 115 is almost, believe it or not, over 30 years ago.
Wow.
they accused me of stabbing some people here in San Quentin in 1980.
So, but now, for 30 years, you have been living with this moniker and in some ways not being able to get away from it. Is that correct?
That's accurate.
You went to the parole board recently.
Yes, I did.
What do they call you?
Richard, Mr. Johnson. And they specifically said they do not want to hear Razor again because they said it's still connected to the old, you know, and they don't want to hear it.
When they told you that, right, like that it's connected to your past, how do you feel about that now after you had time to reflect on that?
I have to agree. If you say you stepped out out of the darkness into the light, but you're dragging along with you this moniker that people associate you with violence or street activities, but you won't discard that moniker, you haven't changed. So now everybody calling me Richard. Well, how is Richard supposed to act? I know how Ray's supposed to act, but Richard, he's still finding himself, you know? He's a man who spent his whole entire prison career and juvenile career in the shoe. And that's a heavy transition.
Can you just describe to me who Richard is?
He's an all right guy. Richard likes to laugh. He just likes to have fun.
But I see a huge change in the 3 or 4 years that I've known you.
I think the next phase is taking these glasses off. Because I wear glasses on the street. I had a whole box full of glasses. And I wear them in the night, day. It didn't matter. I still wear them. I'm going to continue to wear them until I feel comfortable of letting people see my soul. My name is Richard Johnson, not Razor.
What up, Skillet?
So most guys have monikers when they're in prison, but I wonder what happens when they get out. Do you think most guys keep them?
Yeah, it all depends. I mean, some do, like our Ear Hustle colleague Antoine Williams. He still goes by Banks.
Oh, I always called him Antoine, and in my heart, he will always be Antoine.
Well, I call them bankers. Banker hours.
You always like to add a little extra at the end of someone's name.
I think you do that to everybody's name. You know, you call them what you want to call them, you know.
What about our friend Sticks?
He's still Sticks, or he's Chap.
Oh, my God. You know what? Sometimes I can't even remember his birth name. I always think of him as Sticks.
That's Chappelle, but yeah. We call him Chap.
Chap.
That's the first four initials of his name, Chap.
That's right. And, God, there's been so many people in our stories who are now out.
Kenyatta is still Yatta, or I call him Bly sometimes.
Bly.
But I'll say this. Some guys want to make a clean break from all that prison shit.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll reclaim the name that they had when they came into this world, like Richard Johnson.
There's a lot of people to thank in this episode. So take it away, guys.
Ear Hustle like to thank Jason Griffin, the original Jukebox, LaMavis Cho, Shody, Alvin Williams, which is Gator.
And Richard Johnson, Raphael Nephew Bankston, Alex Ross.
Don't forget Tony Tafoya, David Galley, that's the boy D, and Steve Brook.
And how about Joe Garcia, Richie Morris, and finally Eric Slade Copeland.
See, Ear Hustle is produced on the inside by Nigel Poor, a.k.a. Frisco Freeway. You know we got Rasan Thomas, a.k.a. Purple M&M's, a.k.a. New York, but ain't been out there since forever, right? We got the original Bookworm, too, y'all. That's John Johnson, a.k.a. Yeah, yeah. Whew, took a lot of breath out of me on that one, right? But we also got Pat, the mix master, Masiti Miller.
And on the outside by Erlonious Fatboy Woods and Bruce the Wolverine Wallace.
See, this episode was scored with music by Rasheed Zinnamon, a.k.a. Feather Fingers, Mr. Soft Touch, but don't call him soft, he look like Debo. David Jazzy, the sweetest phenom, with additional engineering by Don Tran, that's Megatron, y'all, the human man bun.
Our senior producer is Curtis Scissorhands Fox. Aaron Machine Gun Wade is the digital producer. Julie Seabiscuit Shapiro is the executive producer for Radiotopia.
See, Ear Hustle like to thank acting warden Ron Broomfield. And as you know, every episode of Ear Hustle has to be approved by the guy we call the Velvet Voice, Red Carpet Treatment, right?
I am Lieutenant Sam Robinson, the Public Information Officer at San Quentin State Prison. And into Season 5, riding shotgun with New York and Nigel and Erlon and Pat and Yaya, Ed Rashid. I do approve this episode.
And this podcast was made possible with support from the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative, working to redesign the justice system by building power and opportunity for communities impacted by incarceration.
Ear Hustle sends fans the emails, newsletters every month with extra tidbits about the shows and the people who make it. Find out more about that and a whole lot else at earhustlesq.com. The show is also on Twitter, y'all, Instagram and Facebook, at earhustlesq.
And stay tuned, because you do not want to miss what's coming up next on Ear Hustle.
Straight up.
And it's like 80 cops out there. They got their name tags covered up. They got their gloves on. They got towels around their necks. They're out there shadow boxing and stretching. We tell them, like, look, man, we already know what time it is. You know what I mean? Take the cuffs off, and we just, you know, let it happen how it happened.
The complicated relationships between correctional officers and guys inside. That's next time on Ear Hustle.
Ear Hustle is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, a collection of the best podcasts around. Hear more at radiotopia.fm. I am Rahsaan New York Thomas.
And I'm Nigel Poor.
I'm Erlonious Fatboy Woods.
Do you know what? I got a hard time for calling you that.
Why?
I don't know.
Well, see, Erlonious came from Kenyatta.
Yeah, no, the fat.
Oh,
the
fat but boy. It's P-H-A-T. It's
no,
not F-A-T.
No, I told them it was F-A-T.
You tell, see, that's what you fucked up at. That's what you fucked up at. You was in. If you just said it's P-H-A-T, that stand for something whole totally different. All right.
I'm Nigel Poor.
And I'm Erlonious Fatboy Woods. Thanks for listening.
Ta-da, tick-tock, you don't stop. Ta-da, tick-tick, you don't quit. Hit it.
Radiotopia.